coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
Like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to The Collision. This is where sports and politics collide, here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, where we are aiming to change the world one broadcast at a time. This is Fun Drive time. We're so excited to be able to support WPFW. I'm here with Chuck Modiano. Chuck, how you doing, sir? Chuck, you with me, buddy?
I am doing great, DZ. How about yourself?
Now there that I'm he on is. Mute. There he is.
There it is.
We also have Katia Stitt on the line. Hello, Katia Stitt, helping us raise money on The Collision.
Hello, gentlemen. We're hey, here. Katia. It feels like a roll call. We're here.
Roll call. I love it. My name is Dave. Pat, pat. I'm here to rock. Pat, pat. I'll stop there. We are so excited to have everybody here with us on The Collision. We're so excited to be raising funds for The Collision. You can call right now, 800-222-9739, or go to WPFWFM.org. This week, we are going to give you a taste of what we discuss on The Collision and what you will be supporting by supporting The Collision. We are going to talk about what's happening in Palestine, as we always will be doing in the weeks to come, and as we've been doing in the months past. We are going to be talking about the Negro Leagues this week and an incredible effort to now recognize, and this took a lot of struggle and a lot of decades, we can't forget that, to recognize the records of Negro League players and to integrate those records into the Major League Baseball record book. We're going to talk about the passing of Bill Walton, somebody who was a basketball prodigy, of course, basketball genius, and a 1970s radical. And maybe we're going to talk about inside the NBA, the television program that capitalism is currently destroying, but maybe it was already destroyed. Ooh, just a little twist there. So Chuck Modiano, are you ready to rumble?
I'm ready to rumble, always ready.
Katia, do you want to say anything about the need to support WPFW before we start on this cavalcade of topics?
I just wanted to encourage people to listen with an open mind, heart, spirit, and wallet. And I'm asking you now, before we even get started, to make those calls that always make the difference at 800-222-9739. Our goal for this hour is $750. You can also go online, and I know many of you are listening online, so just hit the donate button when you go to WPFWFM.org. And again, $750 is a very small price to pay for such an exquisite program as The Collision.
Wow, thank you so much for that. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. So, Chuck.
Yes, sir.
There's so much to discuss this week, but we always said we're going to start with Palestine.
Yeah.
This last week, I'm just going to say some things, and then I want to see what you've been hearing. This past week, of course, we saw the massacres in Rafah, and you saw all the nefarious stages of the Israeli massacre in Rafah. Bombing a refugee camp, killing women, killing children. Now, let's remember the stages of what took place this past week, because it's so important to remember them. And I don't know if this was your experience, Chuck. You should absolutely say if yours was different. But at first, the Israeli trolls said it was all a lie, that anything you heard about what was happening in Rafah, the bombing of the camps, the killing of people in tents, just not true. Then they said it happened, but it was a Hamas rocket that accidentally detonated. Then Netanyahu said, all right, we did it, but it was the result of a malfunction. Whoops. And then you get Nikki Haley, the erstwhile presidential nominee from the Republican Party, now supporting Donald Trump, signing weapons, saying that Israel should finish the job. What kind of imperial madness is this? What have you seen where you stand, Chuck?
Let me just talk about Nikki Haley for a second.
Please.
And media. Because she said finish them back in October. I think Lindsey Graham had similar remarks. Once you do that, once you advocate for genocide, no media should be interviewing you. No one should be talking to you. Okay? Palestinian lives aren't props for your career. And unfortunately, they have been. And at the highest end, you're talking about a Nikki Haley saying finish them, but it's 80% of Congress that's bought out by AIPAC. It's the president. It's Trump as well. All of them and are furthering their careers off of children being beheaded. And we have to be clear about that. This is disgusting. And, you know, I mean, there's so many times that we could sit here in this show and everywhere else and you're like, what is happening? What are we doing? And some people don't get it. And, you know, it brings a lot of disappointment. But let me just say what is positive. June 8th. I want everyone to mark June 8th on their calendar because I attended the conference for a free Palestine in Detroit this weekend. I also dropped in on the Fort Wayne encampment that they had in Detroit. But at that conference, which was amazing, 4,000 people coming together for a free Palestine. That's like unheard of. Everyone was there. There was such incredible solidarity moving forward.
May I interrupt you real quick, Chuck? May I interrupt you really quickly?
You got it.
Oh, you said Fort Wayne. Did you mean Wayne State?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, did I say Fort Wayne?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you didn't travel to Indiana for the encampment and instead went to the school that helped birth the Dodge Revolutionary Union movement right in the middle of Detroit. That seemed like that would make more sense than rural Indiana.
Wait, that's why we make a good team. You're on top of it, DZ. Yes, I appreciate that accountability.
No, please continue. Yeah. Please continue.
Wayne State, they launched their encampment on Friday while a conference, a people's conference for Palestine, 4,000 people, and I might add, like 40 individuals from the DMV, young students who were in the GW encampment, made the trip. Palestinian youth movement was there. It was just beautiful. It was incredible. I could spend a whole hour on it, but I won't do that. I'll say a couple things. And one is, if there was a main theme, it was Joe Biden said he would draw a red line at Rafah. One of his many lies that have come out. Just a serial liar. Trump's not the only serial liar. One of his many lies. So what was announced at that conference is June 8th, we will draw our own red line. That everyone is coming from around the country in dressed in red and will surround the White House in red. If he's not going to draw his red line, the people will. So, anyone listening, make your travel plans.
Wow, wow. I've just, my jaw hit the floor at that announcement, Chuck. Say that again, because I think we're really, you're helping break this news in the DMV. June 8th. Say it again, please.
June 8th, people from all around the country, and it was announced at that conference, if Joe Biden won't draw a red line, the people will. So everyone's going to come down to D.C., who's not already here, and it was suggested to wear red. To wear red. And everyone wearing red will surround the White House. I don't know how, you know, that's going to be a lot of people there. Going to surround the White House, and we'll draw our own red line because Joe Biden can't. We'll do it for him.
Well, that's beautiful. Now, this conference, you said 4,000 people showed up to it.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's 3,500 at the end. Yeah, 3,500. Do you know, we've been, like 5 years ago, I'm at Free Palestine rallies and there are 30 people in the street.
Yes.
Like, we've been to a lot of those. This is unimaginable. You know, we used to tweet on Free Palestine and lose hundreds of followers instantly, right? And this is unthinkable. Unfortunately, the unfortunate part of it is because of the just rogue, genocidal, maniacal government that is the United States of America. But another
can I speak to that? Yeah, you go on, Chuck.
This is my last thing. The other part of it is, what people don't know is that we've been organizing for a long time.
There you go.
But the cameras haven't been there. But we've been out there. The cameras haven't. So what you're actually seeing, though of course it's in response, is a lot of organizing and planning for years that went unseen.
I'm just very glad you made that last point, Chuck, because the easy analysis would just be to say, all right, it's bigger, but it took this level of barbarism to get there by the Israeli state and by the U.S. funding that barbarism. And on the one hand, it's like there is truth to that. That absolutely can't deny. But the barbarism happens all across the world. And yet this is one that people are starting to understand and comprehend in a way that they never have in my lifetime. And
that's right.
That bears the fingerprints of decades past. People like Edward Said, Rashid Khalidi, Noura Erekat. I mean, the organizing that has gone into people having this awakening of consciousness, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
And so the organizing that we're seeing is the product of organizers who've devoted their life to this struggle, first and foremost in Gaza and the West Bank, where they have been organizing for their own liberation for decades, and then people in the United States, Europe, the African continent, Asia, I mean, South America, people picking up that call around the world. So I'm glad you had both of those pieces in there, Chuck. A follow-up question, if I could.
Always.
Everybody is talking about what happened at this conference because of the comments of Rashida Tlaib, the congressperson who's heroically stood with the people of Palestine from day one. Question for you. Yeah. Were you there for her talk? What was the reaction in the crowd?
And then you know what? I was there, but I wasn't there for her talk. You know, I'm upset I missed it, but it was well received, her talk. And, you know, there are these questions about, you know, okay, you have a couple of Congress people, namely Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush, who've been really steadfast since day one about Free Palestine. And then, you know, they come in and they get death threats every day and they get hate every day and they're surrounded by a bunch of Zionists. And you know what? I'm of the opinion, and many in the crowd embraced what she said, and that embracing isn't an admission that, oh, we're going to get enough votes in Congress to get our way out of it. Nobody believes that. But Rashida Tlaib stepping up, Cori Bush stepping up, others stepping up, expands the people who are hearing these messages. And that is very important culturally as we grow a movement.
Well, the part about Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman Tlaib's speech, which, I mean, I give her a lot of credit for this because one wonders if there would have been any media coverage at all of this coming together in Detroit without Rashida Tlaib being willing to put herself out there in such a way. Because you know and I know that these big conferences can be subject to media blackouts like nobody's business.
Yep.
But here's Rashida Tlaib, and she basically said, and I don't have the quote perfectly, but she basically said, Joe Biden is going to hear our dissatisfaction this November. Basically yeah. making the point that, yo, he has not earned our vote.
Yes.
Not he needs to earn our vote. Not I believe he will earn our vote. Not Trump will be 1,000 times worse, which no one argues against. But just this idea that he has somehow earned the vote. Rashida Tlaib is rejecting that idea.
Well, that's absolutely right.
And that was
right.
a very powerful thing to say.
It was very powerful, and it was also in line with everyone there at the conference. Let me tell you how the conference ended. It went three full days, and I was going to leave around, for logistical reasons, around 5. And I had stayed till like 10 because it was that powerful. And there was such incredible energy. And then what happened, if you know, Sunday, the Rafa news broke out a couple hours later. So, you know, now the tenor and the tone of the conference was, you know, a little bit different. I mean, there was, you know, almost you're trying to absorb all this pain and you're hearing these stories about beheaded babies. And so it throws a wrench in there. And then, you know, you come back and you say steadfast and you say, this is what we're going to do. But I'm going to tell you one of the chants and that you had a couple thousand people saying, we're not going to vote for Joe Biden. I don't remember the exact chant, but I'm giving you what it is. We're not going to vote for Joe Biden. For the what Rashida Tlaib said, he has not earned that vote. He said Rafa's a red line. There have been no red lines. He says cute words every now and then. Then he sends $26 billion. He has the UN vote. And Biden and Blinken, what do they do with their UN vote? They use their veto power, which is fascist in and of itself, because you're basically a world dictator when 153 countries want a ceasefire. And only 5% of countries who are against it. So when we look at it and we look at the math, not just 77% of Democrats, I would argue about 95% of the entire world population. And yet your allegiance to AIPAC and the military industrial complex is more important than genocide, obviously, and even your own election. So you know what? Joe Biden has done it to himself. Whatever happens, he's done it to himself. Maybe the Democrats should put forward a non-genocidal fascist candidate if they want to beat a non-genocidal fascist candidate.
You know, I've been thinking about this a great deal, Chuck, and I'd love to get your response to this. And then I want to go back to the pledging, 800-222-9739-WPFWFM.org. Yes, it's AIPAC. Absolutely. Yes, it's also what you said, the military-industrial complex. Absolutely. But in my own effort to try to comprehend why the Democrats are willing to effectively throw this election to a madman like Donald Trump because of another madman, Netanyahu, you know, I keep coming back to not just AIPAC and the military-industrial complex, but also the deep belief that these people, including Joe Biden, have in colonialism and white supremacy.
Yes.
I mean, the idea of saying, like, they view Israel as an outpost of Western civilization in the Middle East.
Yes.
That's been made clear on numerous occasions. And the idea of them saying, well, actually, for the people resisting that would have been like, I don't know, Dwight Eisenhower saying, I stand with Algeria against France. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it goes totally against the mindset of who gets to be in charge of the empire in the United States. And so to have someone in charge who actually says, well, I am for the colonized, not the colonizers. I mean, I don't even know what to say. You'd sooner see the Constitution being used as a baby's bib.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, DC, but generally, politicians do respond to falling poll numbers, right? You know,
normally
want to win. And you know, AIPAC aside, Kufi aside, military industrial complex aside, I believe Joe Biden's advisors have been telling him since October, don't worry, this will blow over. You're going to be fine. Last time they voted for you. And I, if you look at his history, like, historically, that would be like correct. That would be a correct assessment from his advisor. But what his advisors do not know is it's a new day. And these are these young people out there, when they say it, they mean it. I get people in my timeline who are saying, oh, yeah, don't worry. None of them is true. They're gonna vote for Biden. I am telling you that is not true. We are watching babies in the rubble, severed heads. We see what is going on, and the young people are not going to vote for genocide. Now, you know, I'm not going to predict the outcome because Trump is so unpopular. But the point is, if you want to beat a genocidal candidate, you don't put forth a genocidal candidate.
Right. And you don't blame people for not voting for a genocidal candidate. I heard this amazing Palestinian-American speaker, Lexi Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a very well-known, I believe, cartoonist. Like out in Hollywood, she's got a platform. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it has to do with the arts. And she made the point, like, put yourself in my shoes and ask what it is like to be told you must vote for somebody who's perpetuating the genocide of your own people.
And I do that. I put myself in her shoe, in their shoes.
It's powerful, man. You think about it from that perspective of what Palestinian people are being told to do this fall. And it's not just unreasonable, disgusting. It's unfathomable.
It's disgusting. And, you know, after that Joe Biden chant at the conference, the speaker said, you're worried about fascism. I'm worried about my own people dying. And if it's going to happen either way, I mean, that's a serious thing. And I have to tell you, I've been covering protests and Free Palestine rallies for like 10 years, since 2014. And I have a lot of Palestinian friends who I interview. I'm not going to sell them out. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to look them in the eye. You know, I voted for genocide. It's not going to happen. And I do put myself in the shoes. And it, even when I do interviews, I don't normally do this. I say, how's your family doing before I do an interview? Like, I have to ask, how's your family? Is everything all right? And most of the time, the answer is okay. But sometimes it's, I lost 50 family members. That's real. Yeah. Like that's real. This is not like normal, you know, conversation. Well, we got to stop this.
No, I've never been to protests that have this level of mourning, like direct mourning.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Going with the protests themselves. I've never. And that, you know, that speaks to the Palestinian diaspora, certainly.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the carnage that we've had to see. And it speaks to what I always say. People talk about the war between Israel and Hamas. And I always say, no. It is the war on the civilians of Gaza. That's
exactly
what this is.
What it
it's
is.
A war on, not a war with. Let's
that's
not get it twisted.
That's exactly right. And I'm going to tell you what bothers me the most. You know, I'll be talking and I'll say, you know, how's your family? And sometimes the answer will be, I haven't had contact from them. I'll say, you know, why is that? It's not that a lot of people can't have contact. It's that they're afraid if they have contact and they say something in their phone that the IDF, which regularly does, they take their phone. And if your phone says anything positive about resistance, positive about liberation, you can go into be one of those 9,000 Palestinian hostages in one of their prisons. There's 132 Israeli hostages. There's 9,000 Palestinians. But yeah, I don't hear anyone talking about that. And no. The vast majority never even been charged for anything. And those who've been charged, you know, so many bogus charges. I mean, it's so ridiculous. But imagine you can't contact your loved one because you're afraid your contact is going to send them to prison.
Or your contact will provide some sort of satellite homing on where they are.
Yeah.
And then they link the conversation with that. I mean, it's that scary. And there's been a lot about the mechanization of this particular stage of the genocide, the computer mechanization that we haven't seen. But I digress. I'm so glad we could talk. The most important thing from this discussion, Chuck, that I want people to remember is June the 8th.
That's it.
Creating this red line around the White House. That's what's most important.
Yep.
And what's so important is that we are continually able to present this kind of news to you, the people out there. We talk about sports. We talk about politics. In moments like this, we talk about how you can get involved to stop something that deserves to be stopped. And I'll say, I've said this every week, but as a Jewish person who really, really hates the way that my faith has been tied up in this carnage, I so appreciate having WPFW and having a space where voices like mine can be heard, because we're certainly not getting play in the mainstream media, organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace, if not now. We have to fight to be heard. Otherwise, we get erased as being a voice that says not in our name. So please support WPFW, 800-222-9739. Go to WPFWFM.org. Support the People's Radio Station. Support our ability to do this kind of work. 800-222-9739. It doesn't take a lot. I mean, of course, we would love it if somebody said, you know what? I don't want to hear any more pledging. I want to hear about the new Negro League records and how they're going to be integrated into Major League Baseball. Here's a check for $750. That would be a beautiful thing. That would be a lovely thing. And I would smile and I would take you out for a drink. But we are of soft drinks, of course. Got to be with regulations here. But 800-222-9739. WPFWFM.org. Katia Stitt, is there anything you would like to add as we move towards the bottom of the hour?
I just want to encourage folks out there to call now. We need someone to get us started. We are have a goal of $750, as Dave so eloquently laid out. And many hands make light work. So if you are able to be one of the many hands, even though Dave laid it out, if you have that $750, and I know many of you do, you've done very well in life materially, but now we're asking you to dig deeper than that, you know, and say yes to a medium, a liberatory medium like WPFW and The Collision. We're asking you to dig deeper and decide to make that call that makes the difference. 800-222-9739. You can also become a sustaining member, which would help us meet the goal of $750 this morning. And you can do that both by calling or online at WPFWFM.org. I also want to shout out, if I may, Gus Griffin, who was also a BAP member, Black Alliance for Peace member, representing in Detroit at the conference. I happened to see him last night. He said it was extraordinary.
And I saw also, Gus. We had lunch.
Yeah, amazing warrior for peace here and for justice at Montgomery College. You know, like many have been persecuted for the work that they've been doing on the campus, but he stays strong. And that is why we have a WPFW, to lift up those voices, Chuck's voice, Dave's voice, and the voice of Gus and others doing this work. I also want to draw the line between Congo and Palestine. We had a full day of teaching yesterday, 15 hours on the Congo. Mm-hmm. And one of the amazing segments, there were so many, and one of the things, sort of the issues that kept coming up is this line between the Israeli government, what's happening, the genocide in the Congo, and the genocide in Palestine. It kept being lifted up. And so we have to remember that, you know, there's been a genocide in the Congo for 30 years. And of course, what's happening in Palestine. And in addition to, I forget exactly how you framed it, but in addition to it being something that, you know, our government is complicit in, something that the Israeli government, in terms of the Congo, both governments are complicit in. It's also an issue of racism because, you know, when it's genocide in the Western world, it's taken up. You know what I mean? When it's genocide, when the people that it's visited upon look like those, mostly those in, or those who are mostly in power, or yes, I'm not saying it correctly, but you understand what I'm saying. When they look like the oppressor, then it's taken up. It's only when the skin is a little darker that it's not. And we have to remember that all of these struggles, you said, Dave, there's many struggles around the world. All of these struggles are linked. But if you look at what's happening underneath of that, all of these people are people of color. They're either Black people or brown people, or, you know, our Asian brothers and sisters, or, you know, our Asian family. It's all the same. So let us remember that white supremacy, global white supremacy and racism is very alive and well when it comes to reporting on genocide and caring about genocide. And WPFW doesn't allow that division. That's why you listen. And the Collision does not allow that division. So please pledge your support right now. Dave and Chuck and Eitan do such good work all of the time. They bring you the work that they do off air onto the air so you can be informed and you'll understand the issue in a deeper and more thoughtful way than you're getting anywhere else on the dial except for WPFW. And make that call that makes the difference. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. Again, our goal is 750, and we are looking for someone to get us started right now. If you're within the sound of our voices, please do that right now. We do nothing here without you, and you've done so beautifully for 47 years. And I challenge those of you who listened to the Congo, and there were many who said it was an exceptional program, and of course, they linked it back to the Radio Free Palestine, right? So If any of those special days of political programming have moved you, now's the time to call, because this is just the reporting that Dave and Chuck are doing this morning and do every Thursday morning. 800-222-9739, $750 to go, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org.
You know, Katia, before we go to break here at the bottom of the hour, I feel like I need to give you the credit that's very deserved for producing this day on the Congo yesterday. I mean, just a day of beautiful programming. And also, to me, it was a little bit chilling to think about, if WPFW doesn't exist, where would I even be getting this news in the first place? I know we can always seek out news in this era of the internet, but if you don't know something is really happening, how are you supposed to seek it out in the first place? And that's where WPFW becomes so important, because just like Chuck spoke about June 8th, the red line demonstration at the White House, you were able to put together and produce this day of programming that I just think opened up a lot of eyes throughout the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And that in and of its own makes WPFW worth supporting. I mean, everything we do makes us worth supporting. But to be able to do Radio Free Palestine, to be able to do this day of programming on the Congo, it makes the network special and different. And it's something that we should treasure. But it's only able to do that because we are unembedded media, because we're not like the Washington Post or the New York Times accountable to the pressures of the 1%. We're accountable to you. So please call 800-222-9739. Be part of the 99% that listens to WPFW and supports us. Go to WPFWFM.org. We need you to get us started so we can do the kind of work so necessary for this. We are in the swamp. We are in the nation's capital. We need people organizing here. When there are demonstrations in D.C., when there is politics of dissent happening in D.C., I hear about it from friends I have all over the world. I mean, people got to understand that what we do here is gold, because it lets people know that the United States is not a monolith. And that gives people a sense of hope. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, because we are a part of that. Get us started. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. We're going to go to a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to speak about the importance of and the celebration that we should feel in our hearts of Major League Baseball finally recognizing the letters, the records set by the Negro Leagues. I'm going to speak about that. Chuck has a lot to say about it. We're going to go to a quick break. As we're in break, 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. We're The Collision. We'll be back right after this.
When it hit, you feel no pain. White folks say it controls your brain. I know better than that. That's game, and we ready for that. Two soldiers headed the pack. Matter of fact, who got the
war
and where my army at? Rather attack and not react. Back to beats, it don't reflect on how many records get sold on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Whether your projects put on hold in the real world. These just people with ideas. They just like me and you. When the smoke and cameras disappear again, the real world. It's bigger than all these fake records. Wait, poor folks got the millions, and my woman's disrespected.
if you check 1-2, my word of advice to you is just relax. Just do what you got to do. If that don't work, then kick the facts. If you a fighter, rider, bada, flame igniter, a crowd exciter, or you wanna just get high, then just say it. But then if you a lie, lie, pants on fire, wolf cry, agent with a why, I'm gonna know it when I play it. It's bigger than
hell. We are back on the collision. So exciting. My dog is barking. That's how excited we are. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. Please support the work we're doing on the collision. Chuck Modiano.
Yes, sir.
Got to talk about what's happening in Major League Baseball and their willingness to finally acknowledge the record set in by the Negro Leagues. They're doing it, even though the Negro Leagues lasted into the 1950s, they're cutting it off at 1948. Based on the input of historians and people of that nature, statisticians, and they're finally going to be recognizing those decades before Jackie Robinson smashed the Major League Baseball color line. And I want to say a few words, if I can, fulminate about it for a second, and then throw it to you for whatever fulminating you need to do, Chuck, because I know this issue is near and dear.
Let's fulminate. Right.
I'll make it quick so you could jump in, because there are people out there, people who are on our side of these sports questions, saying, this is not a big deal. Major League Baseball denied these marks for 75 years. Why are we giving them a cookie for finally acknowledging this? Or people who have said to me, this is just public relations to cover the fact that they've done a horrific job attracting young Black Americans to play the sport. I've heard that on both counts. Don't give MLB a cookie for denying these marks for 75 years. Now, while that may be true, there are a couple things this denies. There are a couple things this ignores. The first thing is that Major League Baseball is not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. People have fought for this.
Yes.
You know, statisticians, historians, activists, the Negro League Museum in Kansas City, they have all been advocating for this for a long time. So we should celebrate their victory. The second thing is that I think it's a great thing that, like, my children and my children's children, who I hope are baseball fans, because I think it's a beautiful game, will be looking in the record books on their own and see that baseball's all-time leading hitter and batting average is no longer Ty Cobb in his mark of 367. Now they'll see, oh, it's Josh Gibson, who hit 372. You know, they'll look up the single-season record for batting average, and it's no longer Rogers Hornsby, who may have been in the Ku Klux Klan, and his 320 and his 424 average. It's now Josh Gibson and his staggering 466. You know, this is Josh Gibson, the Pittsburgh Crawfords and Homestead Grays catcher, is now the all-time leader in career slugging percentage over Babe Ruth. And they're going to learn that Gibson did all this as a catcher, a position that wears down great hitters with the stress it puts on the back and knees. And it boggles the mind. It's going to change greatest of all time discussions as people put Josh Gibson up there in the rare air where he has always belonged. This is a good thing. I like that the apartheid records of Major League Baseball have been smashed. It's not Jackie Robinson 1947, but you know what it is? It's victory. And it's victory for Josh Gibson, his family that's been advocating for this, Cool Papa Bell, Oscar Charleston, Satchel Paige. This list goes on and on of the vindication involved with this taking place. And I do think it's a big deal. I don't think this is just about MLB covering for their own horrible practices. Even if it partly might be that, this is even bigger than that, because this is the national pastime. And to have Josh Gibson claim his place at the top of the national pastime, to me, is a beautiful thing.
That was very well said, sir, as always.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was my fulmination. You're an expert on this, though, so I would love your thoughts.
Well, it's funny. I was going to go to the Negro League. They have an annual conference, and I was planning to go, and I would never have been more excited to go. It's in Cooperstown in a couple of weeks. And I had to cancel because of the June 8th conflict. Like, it was one of the hardest, like, oh, I really, really wanted to go. You know, it was going to be great. But I'm not going to go there. And it's going to be incredible discussion because of the June 8th in Washington, D.C., the red line that we're going to draw around the White House. That said, yes, this is incredible. And the motivation of MLB is irrelevant. It's the outcome that matters. Not only that, as you said, Shout out to Bob Kendrick, who of the president of the Negro League Museum, who I DM'd and wanted him to, we wanted him to be on this show. I don't think he got it because I think he's in big demand right now, but I've interviewed him a few times. He's incredible. He's worked for years to be here. Shout out to the historians like Larry Lester, who's dedicated his life over decades to mine data, for years and decades to fight, going through newspapers and black newspapers, every single one, in meticulous fashion. People have no idea the work that was taken to recover the box scores, entire initiatives. So all these historians who brought this data, and a lot of data should be there, it's missing. Like if you had one false number on a box score, it was discounted. But the point is, this is a win for all of those Negro League players, the Negro League historians, and the Negro League Museum, who made this happen. It wouldn't have happened if not for them. So this is incredible, and it's just. And I got a whole rant about some of the haters. I don't know if you want me to do it now or if you want me to do it later. So
rant away, sir. This is too important.
Okay. Some of these white people, and I say white people because they're all white who have this criticism, like every last one of them. They're saying things like Negro Leagues is the minor leagues. They're saying, I'm even here. WNBA. They're like, this is what I'm reading. These people.
A little dose of sexism in there, too.
yes. These people who've never done a stitch of research, who've never once complained about the apartheid records, as you so eloquently put, all of a sudden have a problem. You never cared about Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak that he never had to face the Kansas City Monarchs, who had the best 1-2 punch in baseball in 1941, a Satchel Paige and Hilton Smith, and he would have to face them in four games. That Joe DiMaggio only faced one Hall of Famer in his prime, that was Bob Feller. That two of the three best pitchers, the best and arguably second or third, were on the Kansas City Monarchs. You never complained about that. You never complained about any of these apartheid records. And now you got something to say. So I have something to say to them. I mean, we could get intellectual and statistical, but I'm going to give you one simple fact. And people who are listening, you can use this when you talk to these idiots, if you choose to talk to these idiots. So, and here's what it is. When Jackie Robinson won the NL MVP in 1949, between 1949 and 1969, in those 21 years, 16 of the MVPs went to black players or Hispanic player, Orlando Cepeda. 16 of 21 went to black players. Now, we know the American League. Yeah, it's incredible. We know the American League wasn't integrating outside of the Cleveland Indians and that the Red Sox did not integrate Pumpsy Green until 1960, 13 years after Jackie Robinson. They were staying white, you know. But the National League integrated. And you have a list of Hall of Famers like Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and Ernie Banks and Roy Campanella just running the table of these awards. So I did a little research. I think you might be interested in the research. Here's who some of those awards took away from. That if you just had white people, Wally Moon, if you ever heard of him, would have won an MVP. Joey J would have won an MVP. Tim McCarver would have won an MVP if it was still all white. Okay? Those are the names. These are great Hall of Famers. So I looked at the 50s. And in the 50s, I think in 1950, Jim Constantine won and Hank Sauer won. Those are two white players. And then the next 7 years, black players won the MVP. And then something happened in 1960. They're like, all right, enough of these black players winning MVP. We need to push some white players. So Dick Groat in 1960 shamelessly gets it over Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. And then a couple of years later, Ken Boyer gets it over Willie Mays. Willie Mays has like an 11 war, and for those who know this stuff, and Ken Boyer is 6.4. We're just like, but these aren't like close battles. And then even all three times, you could argue Willie Mays should have won the MVP at the highest war all those 3 years in the 1960s. So even though it's 16 of 21, it's probably more 19 of 21, should be. We'll give Sandy Koufax him, he's a pitcher. But there wasn't a single like really hitter who deserved it. So this is what happened for the next 21 years. So let's put our brains together objectively. What do you think would have happened the previous 21 years from 1929 to 1949? How would those record books have changed? You don't have to be a rocket scientist. And this was before black players were spread out into football and baseball and all the Latin players. Remember, they played in the Negro Leagues as well. Everyone who's dominating. So you don't have to be like a baseball historian to say if really the next 21 years all went to black and Latino players, that would have happened the previous 21 years. That's where Josh Gibson comes into play. That's where Oscar Charleston comes into play. The old timers say he's even better than Willie Mays. That's where Pop Lloyd comes into play. Buck Leonard, Willie Wells, Satchel Paige, Hilton Smith, Smokey Joe Williams. We could go on and on. Leon Day. Okay, but the people who are complaining don't know these players. But you know Willie Mays, and you honor Willie Mays. Why? Because Willie Mays must be validated by white eyes to get the credit from white people.
Mm-hmm. Great points all around, Chuck, for sure.
Yes.
Did I just cut you off? Because I was going to come in with something. But...
No, you come in. I got more rant later. Please come in.
Oh, and please do rant later. I wanted to come in first and foremost to thank some of the people who are starting to give to the Collision in WPFW. I don't have the names in front of me, but it is starting to take place, and really do appreciate it. Katia, feel free to jump in anytime we get some folks given to the show. This is fundraising time, and that is foremost on our minds.
I just want to say thank you to Anonymous out of Riverdale. Thank you so much. Ramon out of Fort Washington, thank you very much. John Melodia, what a melodic name, John, out of Middle Village, New York. Thank you so much. And Wilbert and Paulette Glover out of Adelphi. Thank you so much. Keep the calls coming, folks. 575 to go. We can still do this together, very much so. You've come through beautifully. 800-222-9739. WPFWFM.org, 202-588-9739. I don't want to take a moment away from this discussion on the Negro League, so I'm going to move out the way, but please call, make that call that makes a difference, 800-222-9739 or online at WPFWFM.org.
Thank you so much for that, Katia, and thank you, everybody, listening in and helping support the program and supporting this unique, unique station, WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. Chuck, the point that I know you agree with me about, but the one that I need to make for our listeners,
yeah,
is that, yeah, Major League Baseball, in announcing this and patting themselves on the back for being so progressive and recognizing it and all the rest of it, that might be enough hypocrisy to make us roll our eyes and, you know, reach for the nearest bag, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
But what it also does is it presents us with an opportunity to then tell the history. Exactly. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
To think, okay, let's talk about it. Because while they're celebrating the Negro Leagues, it's up to people like you and me and the museum and everybody to point out that the Negro Leagues was destroyed by Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you made that point in your article.
Gotta make that point. Because yep. The Negro Leagues was the most successful, can make the case, nationally run black business in the United States. And everybody knew after World War II that integration was on the horizon, because you had organizations, you had leading political figures like New York City Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia. You had the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Happy Chandler, who took over after the death of racist and segregationist Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis. And Happy Chandler said what a lot of people were saying after World War II, which is, if somebody, meaning black soldiers or black people, black men, if somebody is good enough to fight in the army, then they're good enough to play baseball. You know, and that was their
the double V, the double V campaign, right?
The double V campaign, exactly.
Pittsburgh Corey, I think, was really pushing that.
Mm-hmm. And very big in it was the Communist Party in New York City had
right.
a whole area of work that they called End Jim Crow in baseball.
The Daily Worker.
And
your friend Lester Rodney.
The late, great Lester Red Rodney heading up that campaign, doing all kinds of interesting things, like the Yankees would have open tryout days as a PR stunt, and Lester Rodney would show up with the best black players in his neighborhood and be like, are you going to let them try out or not? And it was powerful work. But it's like, we need to point out the fact that even though it looked like the double V was on the horizon, in the Negro Leagues, they had their own agenda of what they wanted to see. They said, bring in entire teams. You know, that way we have black ownership. That way we have black management. That way we have black groundskeepers, bookkeepers, groundskeepers, you know, like the whole trainers. I mean, a whole network of black professionals and laborers moving into Major League Baseball. That was the dream. And it wasn't some crazy pipe dream because one Major League Baseball owner, and that would be Bill Veeck of Cleveland, supported this, but he got no other support whatsoever. Right. But think about how, wow, Chuck, just let your mind go to how the civil rights movement even may have been different in the 1950s if the national pastime contained true black economic power. And think about how it's now 2024 and there still are no black majority franchise owners in Major League Baseball. And that progress, that effort at progress, was on the table 75 years ago and was cruelly discarded, and we're still paying for that. That's why these choices we make in terms of activism are so important, because sometimes when you miss an opportunity, it takes decades to get it back.
That's right. And you're making me think about the ABA. When they integrated with the NBA, they took four teams. They took the Pacers, the Spurs, the Nets, and forgetting the fourth. They took four teams. What if you took the Newark Eagles? What if you took the Homestead Grays, right? What if you took the Pittsburgh Crawfords, the Kansas City Monarchs as full teams? Wouldn't that have been something?
Oh, it would have been. It would have changed things so culturally beyond just, wow, that's a more just way to do things. I mean, that's, of course, true. And we could say that's a more just way to do things. But it's bigger than that. Because think about, I mean, all you have to do is think about the symbolic power of Jackie Robinson and the way that has echoed throughout the ages. And then consider yourself also, what if the weight of that moment was not all on the shoulders of Jackie Robinson?
Right.
You know, right. And what would the ripple effect have been in U.S. culture to see black people in the owner's box, women in the owner's box.
Effa Manley.
You know, Effa Manley. So, you know, this is all very important for us to think about and consider. But yeah. I digress. You and I can talk about this all day and night. And we're actually reaching towards the end of the show. And, you know, and next week, by the way, we're just to give people an idea. Coach Kevin McNutt, one of the greats who comes on our show, is going to come on and we'll do a bigger discussion about the legacy of Bill Walton, which is a very fascinating political trajectory that he went on in his life. And we want to talk about that in great detail. But before we end with this show, we want to do more pledging. Katia, anything from you that you would like to add?
I just want to thank someone that just came through. Actually, a few people just came through. Oh, our dear Renee Bowser, trade unionist, wonderful person. Thank you for letting me know. Oh, about June 8th demonstration. And I like the way you draw a connection between sports and politics. Indeed, we do, Renee. Thank you so much. And Stevenson Bush out of Fairfax, Virginia, also getting us closer to that goal. We still have $475 to go this hour. We have 8 minutes until the top of the hour. Please, we ask you to be in solidarity with us right now. Be in solidarity with the good work that the Collision does. Today, we have Dave and Chuck and this fascinating and informative and critical conversation on the Negro Leagues that we none of us know. I didn't know this history. I mean, I knew about the Negro Leagues, but I didn't know about what is happening right now around the Negro Leagues. And I'm sure many of you listening did not. I'm sure many of you listening didn't know about June 8th. There is so much information that they bring forth every week. This is worth your pledge. Be in solidarity with them. They pour into us every week. Please pour back into the Collision. $475 to go. We ask you to go to the phone right now. Do not delay. We only have 7 minutes. 800-222-9739. Or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. Think about becoming a sustaining member. If we have one person at the $50 level, we will have made our goal for this morning, and you will feel so good, and we will be ecstatic and grateful to you. 800-222-9739, or many, it's many people coming through at the $5, $10, $15, $20 level. Whatever you have in your heart and your wallet and your mind to give, do it now. 800-222-9739. Do it for the collision. Do it for the tireless work that Dave and Eitan and Chuck and sometimes Coach McNutt does on behalf of this station as volunteers. They give of their time. This is what they do in the world, and yet they come here to volunteer and share that knowledge with us. How fortunate we are. Let us show them our gratitude. 800-222-9739, $475 to go. WPFWFM.org, 6 minutes to do it. Gentlemen, I'll give it back to you. Thank you so much for your service today.
Thank you, Katia. I'm going to put this out to everybody right now. Josh Gibson's new record that he now holds for batting average in a season is 466. Anybody out there who donates $466 to the collision, we will just about have made our goal, and it would be a beautiful tribute to this news that we're talking about, because we are the kind of station that if we had been around in the 1920s and 30s, this is exactly what we would have been highlighting. And so $466 will get us so close to our goal. Do it for the Josh Gibson record of hitting 466 in a season, which now takes out Rogers Hornsby's record of 424. And if you know anything about the history of Rogers Hornsby, this is just very delicious right now.
Yeah, they're taking out a couple white supremacists in Ty Cobb and Roger Hornsby.
Well, it's interesting. The Ty Cobb white supremacy thing has been challenged historically.
Yeah, I read some of that. I disagree.
I need to read more deeply into it, but Roger Hornsby, I feel very strongly, members of the Klan.
Right? Yeah.
Open. But I digress. We're going to break. I think we're just about done with the program. Chuck, any last words or thoughts?
Yeah, I want to shout out to our Palestinian youth movement. It was incredible putting things together. Students of Justice of Palestine, both at the conference and organizing locally. Shout out to Magic Mike for the Dead Prez track. And, till next week, we see June 8th. Put that on your calendar. Come down from wherever you are. Come to D.C.
Absolutely. In next week's program, Coach Kevin McNutt will be on to talk about the legacy of Bill Walton. And I'm going to speak the basketball legacy, and I'm going to speak about the actually pretty complicated political legacy of Bill Walton that deserves examination. But sometimes, as you know, Chuck, people contain multitudes. They have some politics in their 20s, maybe different in their 30s, maybe different in their 40s. But as people who see ourselves as historians of sports, we have the right to be able to say, let's talk about Bill Walton in his 20s and what he stood for, and let's draw inspiration from that.
Which
I love doing. But yo, everybody out there, last chance to do it. 800-222-9739 or go to WPFWFM.org. For Chuck Modiano, I'll say it too. Don't forget June 8th. Put it on the calendar. Surround the White House in red. Let's draw our own red line, because Joe Biden ain't doing it for us. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Music is my life.
This is Mason Burns, son of DC's Sandman Burns. On May 31st, my father's birthday, WPFW celebrates his life and legacy and the 40th anniversary of house music from 5 a.m. until midnight. Also at noon on that day, my family, DJ Kool, and Sam's friends would gather as the District of Columbia honors him with the street naming ceremony of Sandman Burns Way, located at Longfellow Park, 18th and M Streets Northwest. All are welcome to attend and be a part of DC's history. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Music is my life. Music is my life. Music is my life.
Come to the WPFW Open House this Saturday, 10 to 3 p.m. Greetings, this is Miyuki Williams, Interim General Manager of WPFW. Come meet programmers, LSB members, and other listeners just like yourself. You have an opportunity to drop off a check. There will be CDs for sale, books, and baked goods. It is free, but you have to register at Eventbrite. Go to WPFW Open House. See you this Saturday at 1990 K Street Northwest. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come.
Hi, this is Robin Holden, the proprietor of Robin's Place. Every Friday evening from 7 until 10 p.m., Robin's Place is a mythical entertainment center consisting of four floors. On each floor of Robin's Place, we have rooms that are named after people who I think are icons in music, theater, and literature. We have the Nancy Wilson Room,